started out in Managua, and this is the hotel we were at. There were 40 of us in our group. Only six of us were age 30 or under. The rest were age 48 or over, because this particular brigade was called the Elders Brigade. It was just an emphasis on older people, and most of the people were from a group called Elders for Survival, based out of San Francisco, and it was really, I really enjoyed being with these older people because they were just an incredible bunch. This was our lodging in Managua, where we stayed for the first day after we got there and had orientation. It's kind of like a hospital ward. This is at the orientation. The woman standing against the pole was the contact in Managua who did all the organizing. It was amazing how well organized it was, even though we often had to wait a long time for a lot of things, but that's typical in any third world country. The woman on the right is the Nicaraguan organizer, and all the Nicaraguans, or very few Nicaraguans, speak English, and so we always had somebody translate, and I don't speak Spanish, which was a disadvantage, although the trip itself was excellent, even though I couldn't speak Spanish. It was kind of amazing to me to see all these houseplants growing wild outside. And also, these were amazing to me. These are papayas. They're about 2 feet long, and the first time I saw them, this was at this hotel we were staying at in Managua, and I was just so impressed and I'd take pictures. But by the end of the trip, they were just the usual thing because we could buy them, and one would feed 40 people. The second night we were in Managua, it was Sunday night, and we attended a service at this church, which some of you who have been to Nicaragua may have been here. The priest who was preaching is a liberation theologist who is getting kicked out of the church, I believe, because of his politics. And this was his last sermon. It was all in Spanish, so I didn't understand a thing. But it was interesting. Father Molina.
Molina,
yeah. And this is the inside of that. And there was a lot of music. It was very lively. They had several people playing guitar and drums and I don't know what all else.
Was that a painting, a mural?
Yeah, that was a mural on the back wall. This was the bus that took us to the UPE. UPE is an abbreviation for State Farm. We worked at a state, well, we spent 16 days at living at this farm. And you might notice later when you see the bus that takes us back, there's a difference. This was my first view of the farm. In the foreground, there are coffee beans that are drying. The coffee beans at this farm that they dried were the ones that they were keeping for themselves. The ones that were going to be exported were taken to another farm that had a coffee processing plant where they would take the shells off or the husks off the beans. Because this particular farm, the original owner, before the revolution in 1979, the original owner was a Somoza supporter, and he fled just before the triumph of the revolution, which is when the Sandinistas took over. And right before fleeing, he burnt the coffee processing plant, and so most of his farm had been destroyed. And it's also one of the poorest farms in Managua. And there are the beans, and the ones that they keep, they let dry in the husks. This was another very obvious thing about this farm. There were pigs everywhere, and they ran all over, and mostly they had their noses to the ground like this. Because they weren't fed, they just ate garbage, and they would run into people's homes a lot. Some of the kids that lived there. There was, at the farm, there were the 40 of us. There were also four plumbers that came down from the States to hook up a water system. There were also 60 high school age kids from Managua that were there to help with the harvest. The reason they needed help is due to the war, they're not able to have enough workers to harvest their crops, and so a lot of groups from a lot of countries, European countries, Canada, U.S., go down there, as well as these high school groups from Nicaragua itself.
Who benefits then?
The money, we were actually being paid for the beans we were picking, and that money went to then some charity that they chose. I don't know how they chose it. And same with the high school kids there, the money they made went to a charity. This is the latrines. There's three doors on each side. Inside each door is 2 to 4 holes, and so you would go in there and chat with whoever you were sitting next. These are some of the people in our group. They are not disabled. The wheelchairs were brought from San Francisco to be donated to a hospital or somewhere that needed them. We took them up to the farm with us because we used them to transport the water before the plumbers had put in the water system. The water had to be carried up their distance.
This senior citizens group, do they have other projects that they went other places?
I'm not sure exactly what the Elders for Survival do. They're a very political organization, and they went last year, or several of them went last year down to Nicaragua on a coffee harvest brigade. The man on the right was our oldest member. He was 89 years old. He was really incredible. He would go out each morning and pick beans with us, although he would usually go back at lunchtime and ride the ox cart back to the farm. But he was incredible. He worked along with everybody else. This is where we stayed, this is our room right here. That's about, somebody measured it and figured it was about 42 feet by 11 and a half feet, and there were 3 shelves inside. There were 15 or so of us spread out on each shelf. This building, or that it's attached to on the right, used to, before the revolution, it's most of the time it held families, campesino families, and each family had a cubicle. It's full of these cubicles stacked 3 high. Each family had a cubicle which was about 6 by 6 by 6. They looked like solitary confinement cells, and we were told that they held anywhere from 2 to 6 people in those. This is our room from the other side. The door on the left is a family's home, and that's the one that the pigs always ran in and out of. This is inside. It's kind of dark, but you can sort of see the shelves. There are the first layer, and the second layer, and the third layer. And that was our living space. I got to live on the third level, which was great because you could stand up next to the wall, and you couldn't stand up on any of the other levels. There is the top shelf. And actually, when we got back to Managua, I sort of missed my shelf life. And there's also electricity for about 1.5 to 2 hours every evening. There's a light bulb right up at one end there. And so we did have some electricity. They had a generator that they would turn on most evenings. Some evenings it didn't come on, we didn't know why.
Were there any insects or things like that?
There were a lot of fleas. That people got a lot of flea bites. Actually, I never saw the fleas. I got a lot of bites. I think they tended to live in our clothing because we didn't get a chance to wash very often. We got a bucket of water every 3 or 4 days to take a bath in, and oftentimes it was more trouble than it was worth, because you'd get clean and the wind would just grow dust all over you again. And it was very, very, I've never been so filthy in my life. This is the kitchen and the dining hall. ATC Presente, that means, the ATC is the Farmers Union. FSLN on the right there, that's the Sandinista Party. And food, we had beans and rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And that was it, just plain beans, plain rice. Sometimes she would make some tortillas. They didn't have salt in them, and so they were very bland. Also, sometimes we'd have these bananas that they picked, very green, and then they peel them and boil them, and they're very tasteless, and so it's like eating a little starched banana. One really interesting thing about eating that way is that we were eating to live, and I've never experienced that type of eating before, just eating to live, and that's the reason. Although we could buy fruit and vegetables occasionally, which we supplemented our diet with. This is the dining hall, also used as writing tables, etc. Right next to the kitchen. Oh, here we are in the kitchen again. I just wanted to show the pigs there. The pigs were actually kept out of the kitchen, although the dogs ran in and out.
They had their shoes on.
Yeah. This is the stove area. It's kind of an L shape, and under that, inside that is where the fire is built, and there is a chimney going straight up there in the middle, although most of the smoke didn't go up the chimney, it just came out into the room and then went out the windows. And there's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's hard to see, but the beans are there on the left. They also made, she also made something called tamal, which is made out of ground up corn and all stuck together with lard, and it's kind of has a consistency of the solidified hot cereal. And at first I thought it tasted pretty good, and then I saw it sitting there. It was covered with flies one day, and I decided that maybe I wouldn't eat too much of it. It was fairly unsanitary cooking conditions. The cook for the farm had strep throat, and she would not ever wash her hands, and even worse things than that. And, actually, a lot of people got sick, and a lot of it was due to the water. We sterilized our water with iodine, but we couldn't boil it because for that many people, it would just been too much, and so a lot of people got parasites. This was before dinner one night. This man was playing guitar and very—I forget what type of music they called it, but very what the farmer type people play. And I took my guitar down there, and there was another person with the guitar, and it was really fun because we played and sang practically every day. And even though they couldn't understand the words we were singing, they really enjoyed listening to music, and they would play music for us. And that was a way, even though I couldn't speak Spanish, it was a way of communicating. This is the thing that grinds the corn. That's the ground of corn in the bottom there. This whole machine is what is used. It's a very old machine left over from Somoza's time. This is the pump that was put in by the plumbers. Before they had this, they would have to walk out over the cistern on a plank and lower a bucket on a rope, and oftentimes knocking mud and things from their shoes, or sometimes kids could fall in. And so they put this pump in, and then they also brought all this stuff from the U.S. And then they hooked up pipes and made it so that the water went down to where it was needed. This is one of the spigots that they set up. And this is the washing area. It used to be that the basin on the right would be filled with buckets of water carried from the cistern. And then the place on the left is used for scrubbing the clothes. This is walking to and from work every day. It was very pleasant. In the lower part of the picture, you can see the lowlands. To the right is Managua. So you can see we weren't very far away. There's Managua on the right there. And Lake Managua in the background. The area reminded me a lot of the lower parts of the Cascades because there is so much leafy vegetation. And it was very hilly. and picked it. And the weather was very pleasant. It was hot if you were in the sun, but when we were picking coffee, we were shaded most of the time by trees, and there was often a breeze. This is just the walk. It usually took us about 20 minutes or so to walk to wherever we were going to be picking. This is a home, a very typical home. You pass these every so often. First day of picking coffee beans, the way you do it is you wear this basket around your waist and pick the beans and put them in there, and then you've got a bag, and so when the basket gets too heavy, you just have to get into that and drag your bag around with you.
Were the long sleeves for protection, or was it that cool in the morning?
It was cool, somewhat cool in the morning, and I would usually take my long sleeve shirt off in the afternoon, although it was also for protection because there were some things which were semi-dangerous, which I've got a picture of later. These are the coffee beans. The red ones are the ripe ones. We were doing the last picking, so we picked everything. You can also eat, if you chew up that red thing, it's very sweet, and you spit out the seed, which is the coffee bean, and the skin. And you can also, if you squeeze it, you can shoot each other with coffee beans. This is just a view of the coffee field. We'd usually, each person would be assigned to a row, or two people to a row. And you can see, if you look really closely, the coffee berries hanging from the trees there. I had to climb up in a tree to get these pictures. Also, the coffee fields were full of banana trees, and it was very jungly. It was just like, it was, and we felt like we were in a movie or something, because it was just crawling through the jungles and very beautiful and very pleasant, really. I enjoyed the coffee picking. There's a person down there at the bottom.
Thank you.
Thank
you. How long did it take you to pick that bean?
I don't know. It took us a long time sometimes to pick beans, because this tree here was the tree of all coffee trees. Most trees were very sparse because it was the last picking. But we found this one, and we just thought we'd come upon a gold mine, and so we had to take pictures of it. And Oscar, who was our guard, he, as well as the guy who told us where to pick, came by, and he thought it was so sweet of us to be taking pictures of this tree. But it was kind of bizarre too to be, you know, have guards around all the time, when actually what they were protecting us from, or themselves from, was Contras, who are funded by the U.S. So that was kind of a... So anyway, we picked this tree clean. These are some of the high school youth from Managua. And they were very typical. They were typical high schoolers, I guess. They liked to listen to music and do whatever whatever high schoolers do in the West. They were upper class, basically. Upper class. This woman is then a campesino, peasant worker, and these people would then earn money for their families or themselves. So we were picking, all these people were, even the little kids. This is one of the dangers. It's hard to see what that is because this guy is squashing this caterpillar. This particular caterpillar, if it hits the back of your hand, it stings, and your arm is paralyzed for about a day and a half. And so what he did is, one of the women in our group got stung, and so he squashed it and put the juice on her bite, or the sting, and I don't know if it helped or not. But these were things we were supposed to be aware of. I always wore gloves and really didn't worry about it. And you really can't think about it because you can't look behind every leaf. This was another thing that was encountered. This is a coral snake. One of the high school students found it, and they are very deadly poisonous. But that was the only one of those that we saw. And when we get take breaks, climb trees. And this woman was the nurse that went along on our group, and she had her hands full with all the people that got sick in our group, and also she held classes for the people of the UPE, and also held health sessions where they could come in, and she would help teach them about things as well as give them medication. Here's another house plant climbing up a tree. It's a philodendron. These guys brought our lunch to us every day about noon, and and they also then they would go back, and then they'd come back at the end of the day and carry away all the beans. And this is lunchtime. The oxen are way forward. It's hard to see them, and that box there in the middle is what has the rice and beans, and everybody we'd take about an hour and have lunch on the road. No place to wash hands there. A lot of people would use banana leaves to eat off of. And there's a papaya. Sometimes people selling fruit would come by, and we could buy that. That one cost about 75 cents. And of course, the ice cream man would show up, and we never figured out where he came from, but he always seemed to find where all the coffee figures were, and he'd come down with his little bicycle and bunch of ice cream bars and sell them. And ice cream. Because the nearest town was 5 miles away, which was a very small place, wouldn't have an ice cream business. And Managua, if he came from Managua, he had a long bike ride. So we didn't know where he came from. But he had a little bell, and so he'd stand there and ring his bell, and everybody would go buy ice cream. And then at 3 o'clock we would quit picking, and then they would measure the beans, and that's how they would determine how much money you made. And basically each of us averaged 15 cents a day. Our entire group for a week made $15. But we are very slow pickers compared to the native people, and also we were picking the last picking, and so that slowed us down, but mainly I think we were slow pickers.
How much would they make in a day?
I don't know. I never found that out.
What did you do with your beans? Did you give theirs to?
The beans?
Yeah.
That was their beans, that the farm owned them. They basically paid us for working there. And then the ox cart would take all beans back. We only picked beans, the coffee beans, for half the time. The coffee harvest was pretty much over, and so when we were finished with that, we walked to another upe, and here they were getting ready to, they were growing seedlings, coffee seedlings, and getting ready to transplant them. And he's putting a covering over there so that the seedlings stay moist. And our job was to bag dirt. And so from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., we would sit by these little piles and do nothing but fill these little bags with dirt. And that got fairly boring after a while. You heard everybody's life story three times over. And it got a little long by the last day. We were really, really ready to quit this. So they would then transplant the seedlings. You can see the back there is all the bags, and at first we thought, oh, there's not that many mounds of dirt, we won't have to do this for very many days, but they kept clearing new areas back here and making more piles and more piles of dirt, so we had endless piles of dirt. This is the kitchen at that upe. We'd walk there and eat breakfast there, and then go work from 7 to 1 p.m., and then come back here and have lunch, and then walk back to our upe, and then basically we had the late afternoon and evening off. So we only worked 6 hours a day here, although it was much worse than coffee. Sundays we had off, and so we walked in, several of us walked into town, the 5 miles into El Crucero, and this is the market, a typical market. We could buy then pineapples and oranges and bread or whatever we wanted to.
Was that used clothing?
Yeah. And there was quite a variety of people that went to the market. And in town, you'd see a lot of signs and writing on the wall. This basically says, get out Yankee interventionists. The people we'd meet, when we'd tell them why we were there, they would be so happy that we came down there because they were so grateful that there are people in the United States that don't agree with Reagan's policies, and they were incredibly friendly, and they just can't understand why Reagan would be funding the Contras, who are basically terrorists who are attacking the civilian population. And last year, 58 coffee farms were attacked by Contras, and this year none have been attacked, so the Contras have been pushed back in that area. This woman, we were just walking by her house looking, admiring her garden, and she invited us in and was very friendly, and she sells these flowers, but she picked some and gave them to us and told us we had to come back and see her before we left, and it was very,
Hydrangeas.
Is that what's there? Hydrangeas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But all the experiences we had meeting people, it was always the same. They were always very friendly. They begged us to tell Reagan to stop doing what he's doing. This is one of the buses that goes to this town. We walked. They're also regular size buses, also as crowded. This is the truck of the fruit and vegetable man who would visit the Upe about 3 times a week, and we bought tangerines and grapefruits from him. One of the days we were working, we didn't go out to the fields. We stayed at the farm and did a variety of tasks around there, one of which was turning the coffee beans, which I got to be on that group, which was actually pretty fun. You just go back and forth with these things and turn them over. Sitting on the coffee beans. There's a sign that right up here, if you can see it, says it's in English, Elders for Survival are the best people in the world. That appeared one day that we were there, and we figured it must have been one of the Managua kids because a few of them spoke some English. And this is the area that had been burnt. Well, actually, the area on the left used to be the coffee processing plant, and now all that's left is this very little bit of machinery. The rest of it had all been burnt down. This was the day before we were leaving. The day we were leaving, actually. There were all sorts of speeches to be made, and on both sides. The Nicaraguans seemed to love, they're very eloquent speakers, and they love to do long, long speeches. So we had a lot of long speeches to sit through. But they were also very emotional. Oscar, who is the guy here, who was our guard who accompanied us to the fields every day, broke down and cried, and several of the other people did too. And they were just incredible people, and they're incredibly poor people. Here she's giving him, there's a button right there, you can hardly see it, but it says Elders for Survival and something, I'm not sure what else, Solidarity with Nicaraguans. With a picture of Sandino on it. Sandino is basically their hero. 50 or so years ago, he led troops against the occupying United States troops. This is our bus that took us back to Managua. It's a Czechoslovakian-made truck. And it had a hard time navigating the road because it was pretty wide, and it got into a head-on accident with a very small truck, and so they, here we are sitting there while they argued for about 45 minutes over whose fault it was, and then we finally made it back to Managua. And the final 3 days that we spent in Nicaragua, we stayed then again in Managua, and we rented a bus for 2 days and just went around the country and basically went wherever we wanted to. We visited a town up north. This is a prison that we visited, which was up north. It was a new prison, only 3 years old, and kind of a model prison, I guess. This is the carpentry area. They hire carpenters from the town nearby to teach the prisoners carpentry, and because they want to educate the people so that when they leave this prison, they'll be valuable people in society, I guess. And they made beautiful things there. The people in blue are the prisoners. The little boy was the son of one of the men who worked at the prison. These women are prisoners who are, the Sandinistas have been, let's see. They're in a literacy program. Before Somoza's time, it was basically illegal to teach anyone to teach the peasants to read and write. When Sandinistas got into power, one of their big drives was the literacy campaign, and so the illiteracy rate has dropped considerably, and so even in the prison they continue that. And these women were taking a test at the time that we walked by. The Sandinistas also have done a lot, say, in health facilities, in decreasing the disease rate. A lot of things that you don't hear about up here because the press tends to, distort, and the Reagan administration tends to call it, say it's a totalitarian government. It's going to be run by Castro and Russia, and so you miss out on a lot of the benefits that the Sandinistas have done.
Nancy?
Yes.
What do most people think of this Sandinista government, or do they?
It really varies, I think. The people we talk to, we would ask people, well, is your life better now or before the revolution? And oftentimes it was not better because it was harder to get, say, staples that you need. Because the war has so, it's draining their economy, they can't put the money in. In fact, they can't grow enough rice and beans to feed their own country. They have to import it because they have to grow cash crops like coffee and cotton, and so they can finance the war. There's the biblioteca, that's the library. This is still at the prison. This is a banner that the people in San Francisco had made. It says, elders and the youth of the United States in solidarity with Nicaragua. So we unroll that every now and then. The final Thursday we were there, every Thursday, in fact, in front of the U.S. Embassy in Managua, there is a demonstration. And so the final Thursday we were in Managua, and we went, and basically what happens is people walk around in a circle for a while with the signs, and then there's a microphone, and a spokesperson for each group that is represented usually speaks. And it's put on by the Committee of U.S. Citizens Living in Nicaragua. I'm not sure all that this group does, except that it's a peace organization trying to deal with this situation and help Nicaragua. That sign says Citizens of North America against Reagan's War. The scarf she has on there was given to us by the youth that But the youth that were at the UPE with us, they were only there for about a week, and then they left, and so there were lots of speeches and things again. And then they all took off their scarves and gave them to us, and that was really nice. The JS stands for Jovenos Sandinista, which means Sandinista youth. The 19th of July is the triumph of the revolution in 1979, and then it means studies, defense, and production. That's kind of their motto.
Was there any other groups prior or afterwards?
Not in the particular farm we were at. They would send them, this particular group that sends these brigades had 8 groups that went down there, and they went to throughout the harvest season, which is November through the end of February, basically. And they would go to different areas. Some went up north of Managua, or most went up north of Managua. And so they went to various places, whichever needed it. And we were the only ones that went to this one. Last year they had a group go to this one too, so. And there were a lot of other brigades, construction brigades. We met a group from New Mexico that was building houses at a dairy farm. Also, there was a group, a construction brigade from the eastern part of the United States that was located southeast of us, and they had been caught in crossfire for 2 hours. Contras were shooting over their heads, because obviously it would not be to their advantage to kill Americans, but they wanted to scare them, and what these people did was then go to the embassy in Managua and do a lot of yelling and made statements, and then went back the next day and continued on their construction. Yeah.
Was there any comment by the people of the recent antagonisms between Ortega and the church as far as silencing the Roman Catholic radio?
We heard a little bit about that. In fact, the whole state of emergency that was, I think it was last November or October that was started. The press up in the U.S. would like us to believe that it's under a state of martial law. We didn't find that to be the case. They explained about the Catholic radio station. What they said was that they were using their power to quote, undermine the revolution, meaning back the Contras and trying to get the Contras to have a foothold, and since they're involved in this war, they could not allow that to happen. Therefore, they said that they told the radio station they better stop this or they're going to close them down, and they didn't stop it, so they closed them. And that was the explanation.
So they aligned the Catholic Church with the Contras?
No. Certain people, they thought, were using their power, whether it be in the Catholic. However, a lot of the upper hierarchy of the Catholic Church is anti-Sandinista, and that's why that Father Molino was going to be removed from his post.
I'd like to just mention that sometime probably in late March, but coming up pretty soon, Congress will be voting on more aid to the Contras, and they're being asked by the Reagan administration for $100 million this time, which is a significant escalation. And a lot of Congress people are just saying that they're not hearing from people about this particular issue. So some letters to senators and representatives make a big difference in the lives of these people.
And this time also, they're asking for military aid. Last time they got it through on what was, quote, humanitarian aid. And we were also told down there that most of this humanitarian aid was stolen by the Honduran army and then the heads of the Contra, or else it's sitting somewhere. They say it never reached the base troops. But yeah, Congress is going to be voting on that. And it's really incomprehensible to me why the U.S. is backing the Contras. I mean, you just can't understand it. And just being there really brought that out more strongly. I didn't realize that I would feel so strongly about it before I went down there.
I think to add what Tim was saying, any Minnesota residents, it won't be voted on by Congress if it doesn't get to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And the senator from Minnesota, Dave Durenberger, is chairman of that committee. And I think that any Minnesota residents need to express their concerns to him, because he has the power to either delay the bill and table it, or to let it go to the full Congress.
And if anybody's interested in just more detailed information, I've got some pamphlets over there. You can't keep them because they're the only ones I have, and I'll have them. So if you ever, I'm staying upstairs here if you want to ever borrow stuff and read it. There's some good information.
Nancy, you would have been there in the summertime, but would the children of a place like where you were on this farm, would they go to school in winter months, you know?
Well, actually, it is winter there, because there's still north. But it's the dry season, so they basically call it their summer. Uh-huh. And so the students were on their school vacation, and they were picking the beans from like beginning of December through.
But what about the younger children?
Oh, those children at that farm did not go to school. In fact, one of the projects that the Elders for Survival was going to look into was to hire a teacher to live at the farm, because basically the people at this farm were totally uneducated, and to even try to tell the woman who was the cook, wash your hands before you cook, would mean nothing to her, because they just haven't had any education. And that's really, I think, the crux of the issue is education.